You're listening to the Camp Nation podcast. Find us online at campnation.ca.
Welcome to the Camp Nation podcast number 9, the one where Joe's in the house at our beautiful Art Kids Media studio. Today's episode features our discussion on getting things done as a camp director, plus your host picks of the week.
Good day, welcome to Camp Nation for the third week of April 2010. My name is Travis Allison and I'm the social media manager at Art Kids Media, and I was a camp director for 15 years at Glenmore Camp and Cairn in Muskoka, Ontario.
Hi, my name is Dan Weir. I'm the director of Camp La Leonda, and La Leonda is in Frost Valley YMCA, which is located about 2 hours from New York City in the Catskill Mountains, and it's a year-round camping, conferencing, and education facility.
My name is Jennifer Selke, and I am a summer camp director at UC Berkeley. I run a large, rather traditional day camp and oversee a skateboard camp as well as an inclusion camp for kids on the autism spectrum. And I'm also a licensed educational psychologist and have a private practice in the Bay Area.
And my name is Joe Richards, and I'm the summer camp director and administrative director of Pierce Williams Christian Center, which is a United Church of Canada facility in southwestern Ontario, about half an hour southwest of London, Ontario.
Great, and welcome everybody. So we're going to start off our show today as we usually do with links, so some news about stuff related to the camping industry and recreation. And Dan's got something for us.
My link was an article from the New York Times about it's titled "Teaching About Web Includes Troublesome Parts." And basically, it's a little bit narrative. It talks about a school teacher teaching fourth graders about, you know, how to have a positive internet presence. But then it really gives a great link to a resource I've been using for years, which is Common Sense, and it's commonsensemedia.org. They offer a free curriculum for schools that teach students how to behave online, and I think it's a great resource that, after reading that article, you could definitely use for embracing your kids, you know, being online as well, because they're going to go, after the summer's over, online and post pictures of camp and all that fun stuff and making sure that they're covered online.
Cool. I've never seen Common Sense Media. It looks like an awesome resource.
Yeah, they do this thing on age appropriateness that I've been using for years on why kids watch certain movies and why kids might think it's okay to be cartoon violence at a certain age and why, you know, various different things. They have a ton of resources on there.
That's great. I saw this article on the iPhone app. There's the first mention of the iPhone for today. The Common Sense Media, it's funny because teaching kids what's appropriate and how to teach them about troublesome. Last night, I was watching like CSI New York going on the computer, and my son keeps wandering into the room, like up out of his bedroom. And he's like, "Daddy, I can handle these gun shows now." I was like, "You might think you can handle them, but no, you need to go to bed." So...
Yeah. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to watch, this is going to date me, but I wasn't allowed to watch Starsky and Hutch because my mom didn't want me to see Gen Shoes as well. She thought that was too bad. But, so this doesn't talk just about web, right?
Yeah, and I notice a lot at camp, like the differences from what different families find acceptable. I think the hard thing for staff sometimes is when some of the kids are involved or watching things that are maybe, you know, age inappropriate for other kids, and sort of realizing that just because, you know, half of your group has, you know, gone to see a certain movie, it doesn't mean the other half of the group needs to hear about it. And so it's, you know, teaching a 19-year-old how to have that discretion is essential.
Yeah. Going back to the article, the cool thing about the article, it talks about the difficulties. I like to parallel, you know, when you're talking about being online for kids or social networking area, that sort of thing, to the things that already exist, like, you know, dealing with kids watching inappropriate movies or displaying inappropriate attitudes. So.
Well, and not just watching inappropriate movies and attitudes, but the whole fact that some parents don't regulate their kids' online usage at all. So you have a 7-year-old who is able to go anywhere online and is looking up movie covers of like Die Hard, and you're like, that just, you know, that, I don't know. That doesn't, in my parenting style, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
But as Jen said, all parents are different. We deal with this, you know, when kids show up at camp, we can't go under the illusion that they're all getting the exact same experience.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and I think the article, you know, mentions some of the issues just developmentally you know, what kids think are, you know, in their developmental perspective of the idea of privacy or perspective taking or sort of what they put online isn't necessarily private. You know, that varies at different ages, where some kids really realize it's not private but don't care, and other kids just lack that perspective. I mean, in the California school systems, you know, we've had a lot of issues in our the district that I'm in with kids' behavior. Bullying online has kind of cropped up recently with, you know, kids creating, you know, and I hate a specific teacher's group, and, you know, that the, I think these issues are coming more to the forefront, especially as face group seems to now start skewing younger. I think this year I'm seeing kids on Facebook at a much younger age than I did last year.
Definitely, yeah. And FormSpring as well, too. That's my new favorite site where kids are bullying each other as well. So
is FormSpring? What's FormSpring?
FormSpring is basically you create a unanimous profile. Oh, you create a profile, and then people could unanimously ask you questions. And there was actually a girl on Long Island who was harassed to the point where she ended up committing suicide. She was just asked like horrible questions, and now you can actually delete the questions. Before, you couldn't delete the questions. Now you can actually monitor what's on your own page, but before, like, you just have these horrible things pop up and you could choose to comment to them or not. But just to see what people are posting on there is just pretty shocking, you know, and it takes a lot to shock me. So,
well, I know that Spark, the CBC radio program Spark, last week had a thing where they made this other Grant Lawrence, they made him go onto, and I forget the name of the site. I'd love the name of the site, but essentially what the site is you invite your friends to answer these questions about you, not that they post, but that, you know, to give true and honest opinions of you, and then you get this feedback from them. And it can be very, there can be things that are very positive about it, but there can also, because you've only invited your friends, but there can also be things that you're like, I didn't know that about myself at all. And I'm not sure I ever want to know that about myself.
No,
This is called Failings, which is failin.gs.
Failings.
Joe, what's your link?
My link is a link to an article about freelance pricing strategies. A friend of mine forwarded this to me, and the headline came up called "The Scariest Pricing Idea Ever That Works." And so the essence of the article is that this guy has this pricing model where he lets the client decide what they're going to pay. And if you read the article, he's worked out a couple of kinks in it, that you only do this with an established client, someone you've done base work for before. But rather than spend hours putting together a quote for what it might cost and then having to up, you know, to say, well, oh, you're going to add that, that's going to add more money. This guy literally just lets them decide what they're going to pay. It made me think of the tier-based pricing system that we have in place, but this is a bit more extreme.
Yeah, definitely.
But what a great read. It's just a...
Yeah, so his thing was, he does it for clients who've been with him for a long time. So understand his rates.
He's learned to do this.
Oh, right.
Right, because he's done it, he did it with a couple of clients who didn't know him from a hole in the wall,
right,
who just he got recommended to, and then for something that he would have normally charged $2,500, they pay him, you know, $1,200.
Right.
He's saying to do it once somebody already knows the value that you give.
Right. Which would be probably 60% of most camps' parents.
Well, and this is, and Dan, I'm not sure if you've seen this in your pricing, but we noticed, so this year, this is a great example. So this is our third year on the tier-based model. Mm-hmm. This is the first year where I've actually put our counselor and training program on the tier-based model. Before, I had it set up that it was $115 to come to our counselor and training program for 3 weeks at camp. It cost, because we considered that an investment in our future. And we were going to be very stringent about who we let in, and we would let you go really quickly. So we introduced the tier-based model for CITs, and of all of the CITs who've signed up so far, only about 7 or 8, we only take 15, they've all paid above tier 1.
Okay.
Which is awesome.
It sounds a little like it takes advantage of some of the psychology of persuasion. I don't know if you're familiar with Robert Cialdini's work on reciprocity, and from reading that freelance article, the idea that the person's doing some of the work ahead of time you know, you're giving them in a sense something, and so that has that reciprocity of them giving you something back, as opposed to the other way around, where maybe they pay you first or decide first. That, you know, law of reciprocity and the psychology of sort of persuasion and influence isn't taken advantage of.
Did you? Sorry, Jen. Did you say Robert Shields?
Robert Cialdini. He is a professor in Arizona, and he studies the psychology of persuasion.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so there's reciprocity is one of the things with persuasion, where if you've done something first, you know, then people are more likely to do, you know, give you something in return. His really popular book's called Yes, 50 Scientifically Proven Ways to Be Persuasive. I can put a link in the show notes if you all want to add that.
That'd be great.
Yes, please.
You know what it made me think of when you said that, Jen, was that we have, years ago when I started with Pierce Williams, a local minister came out and asked if he could put a sweat lodge on site. And I was a bit cautious, although the United Church of Canada is probably the most liberal church that, you know, exists
in the country. Yeah.
In the country. And so I said, well, let's put it in a place where no one's going to just wander across it. It's out of the way and privacy for the sweat lodge people. But they have a really, he approached it from the pricing model for the sweat lodge, because you're not allowed to charge for a sweat lodge,
right?
In the true tradition of sweat lodges, but you can accept offerings. And so as a minister, he said, it's so weird that we don't gather the offering in church until after the sermon is given. It's almost like, how good did I do today?
Yeah.
And for the sweat lodge, it's all as soon as you walk, as soon as you step on site, you put your offering in. It's whatever you can give at that moment in time. It's not about how good was the experience and how much should I pay now. Like us saying as summer camp directors that, here, don't pay, wait until your kid gets home and then pay. That might not work.
Yes, well, that's true. Jen, we'll turn to you. What's your link today?
The link I have is a New York Times article about the new regulations in California regarding interns. And the reason it kind of struck me with camp is it was a topic that I presented on for South by Southwest, the technology conference in Austin last month. And it was, the session was, you know, ridiculously more popular, sort of, you know, lines in the hall to get in. I wouldn't have imagined that. But tech companies are really, you know, with the amount of labor that's out there and people just trying to get experience, companies are trying to build up an intern program. And when you think of what camp directors really with our sort of CIT programs have been offering for years, we have a really great model for that type of program. And I think the model typically that camps run, where the philosophy is that, you know, you actually, it's a training experience. You're actually, even if you're paying money, you still cost us more in the long run because we're supervising you and we're giving you, extra training, and, you know, you're not taking the place of somebody. And as far as the camp philosophy and how camps run sort of interns or CIT, junior counselor type programs, which is very different than what seems to be happening in more of the tech or business world, where interns tend to be, you know, usurping, traditional employees. And so that's why there's been a number of articles within the last couple of weeks about interns. Are they taking away real jobs? Are, you know, people being taken advantage of? So I think camps have a lot to offer the business community for how to run a great sort of training program. I know we do it for Austin high school kids and younger, but I also have an intern program that works with undergrads and graduate students, because I have a specialized camp for kids with autism. So, you know, the main thing is if you really keep the mentality that the intern is there to be being educated and learn and not to be taken advantage of, you kind of start to fall within some of the guidelines. But it's important to know what your state or country laws are regarding volunteers and interns.
Actually, I read an article from the New York Times as well, but it was more on a national level. And because I initially saw it and I was like, oh no, like, you know, because I have an intern all year long. What it was appearing was that this doesn't apply to not-for-profits in the U.S., that where it's coming down from the national level, from the Fed. a lot of that depends on how the state is going to look at it too. But I think one of the nice things that we do at Frost Valley is with the with anybody that kind of needs to get an internship credit for camp counseling, if they're, for instance, like a program instructor in journalism, we can use that towards their English major, and we still pay them the normal rate, but then we can also help them get college credit as their internship for the summer.
Cool.
And I think the thing about interns is I think that interns is a very American thing, because we don't call it anything like that in Canada. I've never heard of intern.
It's just a way. It's, I mean,
it's a way not to pay people.
Sorry.
Well, that's
it is a way not to pay people.
When I lived in D.C., you know, a lot of people interned on the Hill, or would intern on the Hill. I mean, for the government in Congress, and so they weren't always paid. A lot of it kind of got their foot in the door to a paid position. But I think what happened initially was that, you know, government or not profits were offering internships because they, you know, they didn't have the money to pay to people, but people wanted to volunteer their time and that sort of thing. And then it evolved into, oh, the economy's hitting the floor. All these profit companies need to get people in here. Why don't we just call it an internship, bring people in and not pay them? And, it definitely has gotten out of control in that sense. And I think that's what a lot of the articles are starting to focus on, is that these profit companies can't just bring people in to do jobs that paid employees would do and not give them any benefit.
Yes, yes. Jen, what was the thesis of your presentation at South By?
It was mobilizing the power of interns, and it was sort of how to create – it was twofold, is how to create – an intern program in your company, or decide if you even should create an intern program, as well as managing the millennial generation, sort of Gen Y, managing this generation as a employer. And it really could have been two separate presentations,
right?
In terms of the, you know, the topic area.
Yeah, because, I mean, the last part of it, managing people of this generation, sounds a lot like the stuff that Don Tapscott talked about in Growing Up Digital.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, a lot of the companies really want to have intern. You know, there's a lot of startups at South by Southwest, or a lot of new companies. And so, you know, for them to really consider that these interns need to be supervised in order to have a good program, you know, really a lot of people, there was a lot of things people hadn't considered before. And yet for summer camp directors, it's really commonplace.
Yeah, the concept that we want, and I talk about this with, that we want staff to leave as better people. And I think that that's the essence of the intern position when it started, is that you want to give people experience to succeed so that in the future they'll be more successful.
Right.
Good. Well, great links, everybody. Thank you. We're going to switch gears a bit and move on to our discussion. And since I posted this topic, I'll introduce it. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time today talking about getting things done as a camp director. And I often think about it. I am one of those people. I'm a person who sort of focuses on process a lot. And as anybody who's listened to this long enough knows, I like technology and tools and that sort of thing. So getting things done, or sort of the process of becoming productive, is something that I find really interesting and something that I work hard at. And a lot of things that we've covered in our picks have been productivity things. And that just led me to think we should have a quick discussion. It'd be interesting to hear from the four of us and sort of start a discussion for others to join in to how we manage things. And this section I called Getting Things Done because of a book that I read that I assume that some of you have read as well, by David Allen, called Getting Things Done. And it's been quite widely adopted by sort of the geek crowd, because it just uses tools really efficiently and helps you break down sort of the big, huge list of things in your head, and it helps you break that down into little manageable pieces. And so I read this book every 2 or 3 years and sort of redo everything once again. And the one concept that I'll introduce from that before we sort of move on to real techniques is David Allen's real concept of getting it out of your head and getting it written down somewhere, and then forming a system that you trust so that you know that you don't have to keep worrying about forgetting things because you know that you've written it down, you've done whatever to make get it into your system. So then you can relax because you can just pick away at things you can, and you trust your system that everything that needs to get done is at least written down or accounted for in some way. So there's lots of tools that we can touch on, but I just wanted to see what other people do to keep themselves organized.
For me, I do a lot of consulting work with independent content creators or people in the technology space in helping them sort of manage figuring out a system that works for them. It was something I also do at UC Berkeley when I was working with the student athletes, underprepared, shall we say, student athletes. And really, I think when anybody's looking at a system, it's important to tailor it to the way your brain is already wired. And so what one system works for one person and the way they get their inputs in may not be what another person needs. It may be trying some of the tools but not sort of getting hung up in the number of tools available, or you will spend really your whole day playing with tools and not getting your work done. So for me, I find, you know, the simpler the tool, the better. A lot of what David Allen talks about is, you know, obviously getting the information down, but he also talks a lot about context. And, you know, if you're going to have things coded for different job sites or phone calls or work on the computer, or, you know, you can really break your tasks down very small if that's how you like to process things. So my capture device, even though I have tried a number of different tools, the thing that works best for me is Tootledo as a to-do application. And that works on the iPhone, the iPad, a number of different devices. You can email to it. You can collaborate on different tasks. So if you have another coworker that you're sharing a task list with, you can join accounts. When I had an assistant, I was able to add things to their task list. And so that's a system that works really well for me. And if you're following the David Allen Getting Things Done model, it fits really well with and has the tools to, if you want to be more specific with that model.
How do you spell that?
It's Tootledo. It's Tootledo. Tootledo.com.
I got it right.
I mean, I've tried things. I've tried Remember the Milk. You know, there's a number of different ones out there, and it sort of ends up being less about the tool and more which one seems to fit with the way you process information. And this one just seems to have had the most sticking life and been the most useful for me.
It is about taking what you need from a book like that. I've read Getting Things Done once, and what I find is one of the most frustrating things as when the digital age has come, or that it's come, is the whole fact that task lists on email programs suck.
Yeah.
Like on Outlook, it doesn't work. On Google Apps, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Right? Like how can, you know what you should do, Google? You should really figure out how that task list can be done a lot better. You know, make it simple and easy. It's just, it seems like the simplest thing. And that's, I think, so Dan recommended Todo, or Tux Dux, depending on how you want to pronounce it. That's the
yes.
That's the New York pronunciation of it.
Well, thank you.
And
New Jersey. It's actually New Jersey way of pronouncing
Jersey.
It. Yeah.
It works for me now, but I still find what works for me really well is once a week I just write down a big list of crap that flows out of my head, and then that sheet sort of floats around my desk, and it's always visible, and then at the end of that week I've crossed some off, and I haven't crossed others off, and go from there.
I definitely use a kind of a combo of Todo, Google Calendar, and just pen and paper. When I get done from work, I really don't want to get back into my workday, and I sometimes easily just get an idea, and then suddenly like, oh, why don't I just check on it? And all of a sudden, next thing you know, I'm checking my work email. Next thing you know, I'm responding. And my wife definitely hates me, and she could tell. She says my face changes a little bit when I start doing work as well, too. So I'll write things down on a piece of paper, and then the next morning, I'll figure out if I'm writing it into Todo or if I'm writing it to Google Calendar, if it becomes an appointment or just I need to dedicate some time to, and kind of go from there. And that really has kind of kept me organized, but I definitely – I love lists. Like, I definitely have the satisfaction of crossing something off the list. And that's part of the reason why Remember the Milk didn't work for me. Like, I really do like Todo because you could put a line through it Google Calendar, you could go back and see the appointments you've had. Like, I like being able to see that I've done something in that sense and have that kind of sense of accomplishment in a visual sense.
Yeah, for those that like the paper calendar, there's a great site called Pocket Mod, Pocket and then M-O-D, and it you can print out sort of like these little foldable, sort of an art project as well, because you end up having to try to fold it in a certain way. But it's sort of a organizer in, you know, the 1.0 world. So for those that maybe, you know, they're not going to carry around a phone at camp, but they like the idea of writing things down. The other thing that I've been using a lot more is Dropbox has been a really essential tool. I'm sure everybody's using that as far as being able to access files from different computers, or if I'm working and collaborating with different camp staff, I can give them access to different folders. And it can be web-based if you can't get it downloaded from your, you know, sometimes people's computers. You're getting somebody to add a program in your, you know, network admin group can be a challenge. But also Xmarks has been really helpful for me with collecting sort of private bookmarks across multiple web browsers. So what Xmarks, the free program, allows you to do is install it on all your web browsers and then log in, and it will keep all your bookmarks synced no matter what browser you're in. And that can be a helpful tool in terms of, you know, sometimes we like to have our bookmarks set up a certain way, and then you go and use Chrome or Safari or Firefox, and the bookmarks aren't in the same place or they're not even there at all. And with the auto-population tool, to have Xmarks be able to keep everything synced no matter where I save something has really been a lifesaver. And, you know, then you, if you, you know, need to go on another computer, install Xmarks, and there's your bookmarks are going to be populated.
Yeah, and the great thing with Xmarks is even if you don't want, if you're at somebody else's computer, you can just go to the Xmarks site and all of your things are there too. It's funny, in thinking about this conversation, the whole reason I got into owning a Palm Pilot many, many years ago was this whole organization thing. So in 99, I started working at the Taylor Satin Camps, and I had to hire 260 summer staff, which for me was a ridiculous amount of summer staff to try and hire. I would set up interviews, and I had a paper calendar, and I would set up a lot of phone interviews because you're hiring staff from all over the world. And then I would realize I would miss interviews, and I would be like, "Oh crap, I didn't call Britain. And, you know, I've missed the window. They're now in bed," whatever it is. And so I bought my first, like, handspring Trio, which, you know, the gray screen with the really big card thing on top. And I said to Jen at the time, Jen is my wife's name, and I said, you know, this is a $250 experiment. If I'm using it in 6 months, it's great. And if I'm not, then that's the experiment. And so I moved on, you know, my handspring died. I bought a Sony Clié. My Clié died. I bought a Palm Zaire and then a Palm Centro. And unfortunately, Rogers in Canada never picked up the Palm Pre.
Palm Pre, yeah.
And so now I'm on the iPhone. But it serves the whole function that it's an organization tool, having your calendar everywhere. And using Google as that as well, right? That you can have a Google Calendar that updates to your phone immediately. So I find it invaluable.
Well, it's certainly having that much information available and being able to find more information by accessing the internet makes my iPhone amazing to me. I'm not going to be at camp this summer, so I can't picture what it's going to be like. And maybe, Jen, you've had your iPhone at camp because you've had the iPhones in the States longer than we have. So
yeah, I mean, you know, we're in the Bay Area. You know, I had the first day the iPhone was released, I had three staff in line at 6 a.m. getting their phone, you know, the version 1. And, you know, I got mine like 4 weeks later, waiting to kind of see how it would work. But it was, you know, it was a big deal. You know, they came like right to camp with their iPhone. You know, and it wasn't, would they get there on time? We had subs ready for them. You know, it's technology policies and cell phones at camp is a whole nother show. But we are, you know, we're a camp where people live and die by their iPhone. And so we really try to integrate it a lot. You know, I just got the iPad last week, you know, as far as how that's going to fit in.
iPad? What's an iPad? We don't have that in Canada.
a lot of people, I heard,
and we're not
going to
get it
for theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here,
yes, I mean, that's it. You know, how you utilize all that. There's so many great things you can do from, you know, adding pictures to the web instantly or recording live audio or live video on Quick or, you know, there's some really neat things you can do and integrate it into camp.
I have an iPhone. I don't plan on using it too much, though, this summer in the sense that, you know, I really kind of want a role model that we don't need our iPhones and iPods, like, as much as we necessarily do. And I'm always one to carry it with me. I'm definitely the dork of the group in that sense of, you know, having an iPhone and a camera and a flip and, you know, whatever else to record. I try to kind of role model the sense of, you know, enjoy the moment. And then if you remember to take out your phone or your, you know, take out your camera, go ahead. But to kind of, that should be the second thought, not the first thought, you know, and in that sense. I do it by role modeling it, and I don't know how well it works, but I feel better about my camp experience with the kids and the staff that way.
Well, the iPhone's an interesting thing, and this will be my first summer with it at camp, and I've always carried around my phone at camp, but it wasn't nearly as useful. Like, the Palm Centro simply wasn't as useful, although it did do video and it did do pictures. A great story. I'm out. It snows one day in January. And I think to myself, you know, I'm going to get my son when he comes off the bus. I'm going to be dressed in my gear and we're just going to go straight to the hill. We have this huge toboggan hill at camp and we'll take the snow shovels because it's great packing snow and we'll make ramps. And so I literally shoot video on the side of the hill at camp and I'm uploading pictures as we're doing it and I'm uploading tweets. And then on the walk home, I was like, wouldn't it be great if I could merge all these videos? And I thought there has to be an app for that. And so, sure enough, there is, Video Ninja. And so you merge them all together, and it just made me rethink the whole what an iPhone could be at camp. Now, albeit it has to be an iPhone 3GS, but, you know, if you had a photographer who had an iPhone or like a camp videographer who had an iPhone and you're uploading things, you know, immediately.
3 or 4 a day.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull us back a bit before we happily wander off into iPhone territory once again. I was thinking with this topic, I'm curious to know sort of methods, not just the tools that you use. And I've said before some of the tools that I use, Evernote being a huge one. I definitely use Dropbox, and I use a Mac program called Things. I was thinking about, I taught my senior staff one spring. We did a session on getting things done. And so they were sort of stressed out. It was early in the year. They were getting ready for kids to come and really feeling overwhelmed. And so we just took a break, and I had prepared this session for them and talked about sort of broke down getting things done. And that slides are available for anybody who wants to use them on my SlideShare account, which is slideshare.net/Zoic. You're welcome to use those slides. But it just helped, I think, to give them some tools to make things manageable. And one of the things that I did for them was introduce them to the idea of the hipster PDA, Merlin Mann's recipe card system. And I always have recipe cards in a butterfly clip in my back pocket, no matter how dressy I am. And even now that I've left camp, I still keep it there, so I have something to write on. And one of the first lessons that they needed to know was that my expectation was that they always had a pen and paper with them, because I need to be able to say, do this, you need to leave notes for somebody, etc. And they just weren't, to camp for them wasn't about pen and paper. It was, I think, partly in their transition to senior staff, they hadn't got used to having a pen and paper with them. So I think that was something that they really needed to hear, is that this is an expectation that you're at least organized enough that you have a pen and paper with you at all times.
I have it's a large day camp, and the office, you know, it's probably, you know, like a 20 by 20 room where, you know, 15 people end up working. And yeah, a big thing in our productivity, and I'm, you know, it's a fast paced day camp. So they're kind of brought up in the productivity world just by, you know, the camp is a reflection of the person in charge. So, but where we tend to struggle is in not being tidy and having things left laying around. And when you have a lot of people working closely together, you have to know things need to be filed. They need to have a place. You know, people get an inbox and the inbox can't be your storage drawer. Like, I need to expect to put something in there and not feel like it's going to be lost into the black hole of the inbox. So that's more where our role is, helping them know things need a place to be filed or put, and that will help you stay organized, as opposed to the stacker mentality where it's just one giant pile. And when you're working in a small space, being mindful of how the office looks in terms of tidiness helps people's organization.
Yeah, sure.
Well, and a great story. When I worked in Algonquin Park, the office we had was tiny. There were two desks, which were not really desks. They were just like outcroppings from the wall. And our tripping coordinator one summer decided to use her half of one of those desks as like her storage area.
Right.
And strange things. And you're like, I just don't need to know. I don't need to know you have problems biting your fingernails and you put that cream on so your fingernails taste bad. I don't need to know that. Mentioning no names, but that's creepy.
Well, and you know, I was thinking of another thing in terms of providing tools. One thing that I do that's not a tool specifically, but it's a way that I keep myself organized, is in my email. Another thing that David Allen talks about is inbox zero. So Jen has talked about identifying an inbox, and the goal of that inbox is to get it empty so that you know that something's not nagging on your head of, well, maybe it's in my inbox, there's stuff to do, etc. So I'm that way with email. So I use Gmail or Google Apps for email here at work and at home, and I have every email that comes in to me gets a star on it automatically. And when I deal with it, I remove the star and archive it. So what my goal is always to get my inbox to zero. But then I have things with a star on it still, which aren't in front of me all the time. They're just things that I have to get to. I know during the day when it's time for me to catch up on email that I go to the starred things, and that's where it is. But when things are happening quickly and emails are coming, et cetera, et cetera, I'm not stressed about all of these building up emails in my inbox, because my inbox has 8 or 9 or 10 or 20 things just from today, and I can at any point take 10 minutes and empty it, send stuff to start for later that's not really time sensitive, and deal with stuff if it takes less than 2 minutes, I deal with it.
That goes back to looking at sort of the way an individual's brain processes information. That one of the jobs I have is assessing people in terms of their processing and cognitive processing and how they deal with information. And so whenever I'm meeting with staff or other clients and adults that I'm working with that are often overwhelmed by the amount of inputs in their life, it goes back to, you know, what is working, what's not working, and then finding the system that fits already in the way their brain is wired. And that's, I know some people that manage things very effectively with an inbox of 15,000, and it just stresses me to no end. But that's not, you know, they have other productivity problems, but email's not one of them. And so that's, I think, the hard thing. And when I'm working with my administrative team, it's always on a very individual level of what. Let's talk about the different types of tools that are available, and then which of these tools seems to jive with the way your brain is wired. Because if you have a best fit, instead of trying to sort of wire the brain to fit the tool or say you need to use, you know, the David Allen method and this is how it goes, for some people that maybe don't have any method, that can be a great place to start. But for other people, it's like, you know, I mean, just using, you know, the filters in, you know, Gmail, or running your email through Gmail and using filters very effectively and getting it out of the inbox before it even gets there can be a great, you know, so you don't even see it first. It gets routed for you, can be a great way even to deal with it. But it just depends on where people are at.
Yeah, that's it's a great point that, you know, and I say this about everything. And I say this when I present at conferences, take what you want out of my presentation and leave what you don't. But don't, because you disagree with one point, don't throw the whole thing out. And so, you know, the same as with getting things done. Some of it would work and some of it might not work. My wife's a vice principal, and so it's the whole learning process, right? Different people learn differently, and so they'll do things differently. For me, staying organized is about delegating. Just, you know, letting people, and then not micromanaging, because I had that conversation with someone just the other day about the fact that if you're a camp director and you're truly delegating something, let it go.
Right.
You know, you've hired someone you trust who can do that, and let it go. Would I direct program the same as my program director directs program? 100% no, but that's why I hired her to be my program director, or him to be, right? So
yeah.
If I wanted to direct program, that's what I would make my job at camp.
That's probably the most painful transition I've noticed for counselors that become first-time supervisors is letting right. that go and letting their staff really kind of do that, and something you really need to advocate during staff training.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
from a productivity standpoint, when I look at the admin team, one of the most valuable things, and this is true with a number of the clients, the adult sort of content creators that I work with, one of the most valuable things is a 5-minute that I seem, you know, that I can serve as a sort of a 5-minute check-in person, where I really have no answers or no items for their to-do list, but they have an accountability partner where they can say, okay, this is what my day is looking like. And then I go, okay, when do you plan to do those? You know, I just ask very open-ended questions that helps them structure their day, and, you know, and they say, well, I'm not sure if I should do this. And I'll say, well, why would you want to do it? I don't need to have any knowledge of their overall industry to be that sounding board. And there's a number of people on my client list that honestly, my job is, you know, talking to them at 7 a.m. 4 times a week to find out, and they tell me their task list, and then the next day they tell me what they got done and or didn't get done, but having that person to process with, and I can run through my camp staff, and it just can be a real centering, anchoring point for them to come back to, okay, this is what I need to do. And so I think people as camp directors can kind of think that, you know, that may be a role that they can serve without, you know, trying to provide them with a million different tools, but a notepad and a pen, and let's just talk and just tell me what you're doing, and, you know, and then I'll send you on your way.
I think that's an awesome idea.
Yeah, I think my final thought is just getting things done is about, at camp especially, I find, and as a year-round person at camp, is just rolling with, never set too much on your plate and expect it to actually be finished. So yesterday's a prime example. I put down, okay, what I'm going to do is finish signing birthday cards. I'm going to get to the staff applications that I'm not going to hire, not because I don't like them, just because I don't need them. And I'm going to do, there was something else on the list. None of the three got completely finished because a guy comes and sets up sound equipment for a conference that's coming in, who's an old camp friend of mine. And then someone shows up to put a new arch on top of our sign, right? So like it's just you roll with the punches and do what you need to do.
And I think it's just a matter of equipping yourself so that you're ready for that. So that the wrenches that happen every day at camp aren't... Because I've had people on my staff who just couldn't handle interruptions, couldn't handle so many camp things they just couldn't handle. Because it was so not on their list that they just couldn't deal with it. And it's a matter of just equipping people with the tools to be able to roll with that, and, you know, how to get things done around the craziness of camp.
Yeah. Thanks to you, Jen. I just spent $2.99 on Todoodle.
Oh, great. You should just use my affiliate account, right?
No, oh, jeez.
Disclosure.
It's all good. What's $2.99 to me?
Well, it works on, it's compatible with the iPad, so when you finally get yours, that will be really exciting.
You know what, and I know we talked about the iPhone a bit today already, but the funny thing is I got into it really late because I was sticking by Palm. I was going to be there, and with that $2.99, I could buy Palm. This is awesome. By getting into it really late, I actually got the iPhone 3GS, and now there's a bunch of people stuck on the iPhone 3G, not wanting to break a contract right. to buy a new one, and now they won't get an update.
They're going to stop updating those phones.
Well, they're just not getting the full version 4 update. So,
I might be the only one here that doesn't want an iPad. I don't know.
I'm not committed either way at this point. But do you like yours, Jen?
The iPhone or the iPad?
The iPad.
I do. It's definitely an intermediary device fitting between my iPhone and my laptop. it hasn't really substituted one or the other. And right now I think the document usage and creation is rather clunky. So I don't see it being something that I do a lot of document work on. I think, you know, when we're able to edit Google Docs on the iPad, I think it's, you know, game over, because that's going to be huge. But, and, you know, right now it's more of a consumption tool for me.
Would you, because people in the lead up to the iPad, tons of people said, well, in education and whatnot, it'll be, there'll be all these uses. And I just, is there a use case for summer camp?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess it depends on your camp, but I don't think so right now, unless you're really wanting to play, you know, Scrabble, and it's a very expensive Scrabble board, you know. I don't
and it's,
see it
it's
right
really hard
now
to throw the Scrabble board at that point, right? Like,
yeah, you can't flip the tiles over, you know, because you're
no.
It's, you know, I can't spell, so the whole sort of craze on Scrabble and Words with Friends is really lost on me, but I have gotten all the way through Plants vs. Zombies, I'm proud to say.
I, in fact, saw you tweet that yesterday as I'm on, like, level 5, thinking, my God, when is this game going to end?
Yeah, I know. I wasn't sure when it ended either, and I had a long flight from the East Coast on Monday, so I, you know, basically played it for 7 hours. And
that's awesome.
I have like a repetitive planting injury, but, you know, stress injury.
Repetitive tap industry.
Injuries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure made the flight go fast, I'll tell you that.
That's awesome.
Julia, any final thoughts on getting things done as a camp director?
No, I mean, I have a pick later that I can talk about that's been really
essential
for getting things done that's related, but managing people's to-do and productivity is a sort of a career field that I help people with. You can get really lost in finding one more app or one more cool tool, and that can become your procrastination. I know you talked last week about reading Linchpin as part of the camp director blog that I'm doing, and, you know, this week the post was really on that lizard brain and that brain that sort of keeps you from getting or doing your best work. And I think in productivity apps, that can be your downfall or your avoidance. And you think you're actually doing good because you're cleaning the house and you're finding a new productivity tool, or, you know, I did a dissertation. I know amazing ways to procrastinate. And it really is an approach of actually avoiding what you want to do. So I would say people kind of be leery and watchful of that.
Dan, you have any final thoughts?
I think for me, it's just, you know, remembering that you don't always have to be organized and to have your to-do list and everything through technology. You know, for instance, the meeting I had before coming to record this podcast was we were making our hit list, and it was everything we had to do between now and the start of camp. And what it is, it's posted outside in my boss's office. And even if we make separate lists off of it, we have to go and cross it off of there. So that way it's a kind of visual reminder of it's on the wall, and we're able to kind of look at it and have impromptu meetings right off of that instead of just kind of plugged into a computer the entire time. And the other thing I like about it too is, and definitely this is something I've had to work on over the years, is just leaving my work at work, you know, and especially with living on camp, it's so easy to go home and be like, oh, you know, if I fix that, I can fix this. And then next thing you know, you're down the rabbit hole and it's midnight and you've been doing work the whole time. So people that know me heard me, I was talking, advocating for non-technology use. They would definitely be shocked.
Thank you. I have one tool to add to this, and then a pick. My tool to add to this discussion is called Cypher at cypher.com. And it allows you to do set up rules. Jim was talking about rules for Gmail. And that's exactly what this does. And some pretty complicated rules. And there's a good Lifehacker article that gives you some good starting places. Just something that you can spend some time. I haven't spent a long time. It's on my to-do list to figure out how to use Cypher well, so that my email is processed for me if there's regular things that come in. So I think it has some good possibilities for tool.
Can I just ask a question about, because we all have email. Mm-hmm. Am I the only one who has it all coming to one place?
No.
So when I check my my email, Dan, I'm checking like all accounts are there, and I have filters sending them to different labels. So that's a difficult thing, right? Because I could, what is vacation and what is time away from work? Because at 11 o'clock at night, somebody sends me an email and it says, oh, hey, my police check isn't going to be done until next week. That's a simple two-second reply. Thanks for letting me know. And so, you know, the only email I don't have going to that one is my ultimate password to get into everything else, right? Like my domain, there's a domain administrator email. Right. Lifehacker did a whole article on it that you shouldn't have you shouldn't administer Google Apps through your own email, because then if somebody breaks into your email, they can take everyone else's.
Right.
You should have a separate one set up.
Good point.
Yeah.
Joe, for that stuff, you know, I honestly don't answer it to the next time.
Okay.
And that's really like my Facebook. I go on Facebook when I go home, and most of my Facebook is work. I just don't answer them until the next day. And it's, you know, I don't know if they notice that I'm waiting till when I get in the office or whatever, but I get back to them within 24 hours, and I consider that good enough for them. Nobody really has that urgent of an issue that they need, that they're contacting me through Facebook or
Facebook. Facebook should, in that sense, but at this point, is not the best form of communication.
Yeah, but I do use it. I use it it's the easiest way to get a hold of my staff. You know, like my staff might not check their email every day, but they check their Facebook every day, you know? And so, I definitely have run into situations where they're like, oh, I haven't checked that email in a month. And I'm like, well, I've been emailing you your contract through that email. You know, like, how do you not check that? So.
Good.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, everybody. So we'll start to wrap things up today, and I want to wrap it up with the picks of the week. And since I start off the discussion, I won't start the picks. So, Joe, why don't you tell us what you got?
Yeah, my pick of the week is it's a site called Charity Village, charityvillage.com. And it is essentially a site that I subscribe to their newsletter, but it's for the not-for-profit sector in Canada mainly. I'm not sure if there's a Charity Village stateside, but there's probably something similar to it. But it's the great thing is it has, you know, resources and it has quick guides. It also has like an e-learning, so you can take like a 3-hour course on how to do fundraising, how to do board governance, all of those things. I get the emails once a week. I read through them religiously to find little things. Like I signed up for the Disney Give a Day program as an organization, and apparently a whole bunch of other organizations just skip that part of the of any newsletter. So I had 170 volunteers on one day in February, which is ridiculous.
And amazing.
And so yeah, charityvillage.com.
Nice.
I like Charity Village, so they have a good job board for people who want to work in the nonprofit industry. And you can get emails, alerts, and it's all free. So I don't know if it's free to post. I have never posted jobs there
I think there's a nominal fee to post a job.
Dan, what's your pick?
Mine is how to market your summer camp marketing news. It's a blog written by Erica Nufflin, who's the camp director for Aloha Beach Camp in California. And he blogs probably once a day or maybe sometimes more. It really depends. But there's definitely several ideas I've taken from him and kind of run with of just, you know, different ideas to communicate to parents and whatnot. And it's definitely a nice resource just to put in whatever blog reader you're using or to check up on once in a while if you need ideas. But I definitely found it helpful over the past year just looking for some different inspirations with marketing.
That's awesome. I love the title of his one blog post, Meet the Frugalista, the Coupon Diva Mom. That's awesome.
He really does do a good job of keeping fresh content and reiterating the same kind of core points as well, too.
Jen, your pick is related to time management.
Yeah, I've been this year using Time Driver, and it is a way to schedule appointment times via the web. So how I'm using it is and you can get 90 days free, which is great because you can really try it out and, you know, run it through its paces. But I can determine what times I have available for either phone calls or interviews, and you can set up different groups. So if I want, you know, these are the phone call times and they're 30-minute blocks, or these are the interview times and they're 45 minutes, I can set those in different calendars. And then what I'm given from Time Driver is a link that I email out to people. So if you want, you know, if you send me an email that, you know, you need to talk to me or I want to interview you, I'll send you this link and it'll take you through the steps to schedule an interview with me. And then it just gets sent into my Google Calendar, which I have syncing through. Yeah, see, you're on it. So my Google Calendar syncs into my iCal.
My bad.
It kind of loops in from, you know, I sync Google Calendar to iCal with Spanning Sync, so they're kind of all related to, you know, connected together.
Yeah.
But, you know, it cut down in interviewing large numbers of summer camp staff. It made the process, you know, seamless in that all the staff got through it really easily. You can set up a message so that they see a message first. I'm using it for camper visits that I need. I've even used it for phone calls when I was like, you need to talk to me here, set up an interview. And, you know, you won't be interviewing for camp, but it'll at least get you a 15-minute slot in my life. The one downfall is that the way it's set up, it doesn't really work well on an iPhone. You know, when you have a lot of staff dependent on mobile for their internet access, I think that, you know, can be a bit of a, you know, even Facebook, everybody's really using mobile devices, and there's some research on sort of demographics as to who's on mobile. So that's the only thing that I, you know, I've talked to them about as being a problem.
And Jen, what, when we signed up for the Linchpin Book Club, you used a program that we would sign up through. What one was that?
Yeah, that was Eventbrite. And there is, they just announced it's a way to sort of sell tickets or have registrations. And if your event is free, there's no charge. If you want to use it as a registration system, maybe you want to charge for an event, you can apply for a nonprofit break and have like reduced fees. But it just, I'm using it for some conference registrations that I'm doing, and it runs through PayPal. So you pay a little Eventbrite fee and you pay a little PayPal fee, but the management system is exceptional.
That's great. Perfect.
Cool.
We're laughing because some child is upstairs dropping a ball on the floor. So that's the sound you hear in the background. It's awesome.
Nice.
Like the most, you know, the most annoying camper you had when you were a camp counselor? That's what it feels like.
You should go talk to the child and then record it.
Interview with the annoying kid. I'll do that this summer at camp.
My boss's son is upstairs, and he's usually in the other side of this house that we work in during recording times, but I guess he forgot.
Got up early from his nap.
Yes, he did. So my pick of the week is the 4S's. I mentioned the 4S's lots of places, but I never put it in as a pick. My wife Beth and I have spoken at conferences about us implementing the 4S's, and those of you who've spent any time with me at camp may be sick of it, but it was such an amazing tool that Beth came up with. And it allowed us to make a ton of changes in a very short period of time when we first started directing together. We took over this camp. I'll cut and paste that into the show notes for those who are listening. And the 4S's, in order to do anything at camp, our rule was you had to say yes to each of the 4S's. And so we would, in training, we would have a session sometimes called, let's try to break the 4S's. Let's see if there was something that you could come up with that the answer was no to one of these things that we would still say yes to and give you permission. But really it was just a way to empower staff and kids to make good decisions without having to come back to us all the time, or to make good decisions, you know, when they are away from us as the leaders. And it has become sort of a signature thing at Cairn, where we are. And I know lots of other camps have adopted it too. So I think it's a great tool. I give it out to you. So in order to do anything at camp, you need to be able to answer yes to each of these four questions. Is it safe? Does it promote good stewardship of the environment? Does it serve others in the community? Meaning, do you put other people before yourself? And does it enhance a person's self-esteem? So the cultural change for us when we started using the 4S's test was immediate and drastic. We had lots of problems with, you know, a historic expectation of hazing and things like that. That we got there and just couldn't fathom. And, you know, their answer, of course, was, well, we've always done it that way. And so we just had to give them something to show how we thought about how we treat each other and, you know, how we deal with everything. So that's the 4S's test.
That's awesome. As you were going through it, and I've known about the 4S's for quite a while, I was thinking about a time when I was a young camp programmer, and I was saying, okay, well, let's see if I can apply it to this. And so the concept we had as two young male programmers was, it was raining outside, and we wanted to do like a magic campfire lighting inside the dining hall in the fire pit. And we had this vision of a gas on the fire inside and dropping a match down the chimney. And at the time, my brother was camp director, and he literally, we said, hey, we have this great idea to light campfire tonight. And he just looks at the two of us and says, no gas. And I was like, oh, how did you know? It's not safe. Doesn't promote good stewardship. Doesn't serve others in the community. That's awesome.
Well, I think this has been a great show. I want to give everybody a chance to sort of tell us where people can find out about you. I'm thrilled that we are on the East Coast and the West Coast and on the North Coast today. So, Jen, you're our special guest. Why don't you tell us where we can find out more about you?
Well, you can find me at thecampdirector.com or jenselke.com.
Great. And on the Twitters?
It's Jen Selke on Twitter. Is where I tweet more about technology and related. I kind of save the camp-related tweets for the camp at the camp director.
Dan?
I work at Frost Valley YMCA, which is frostvalley.org. And then I blog at danlovescamp.com, and I also tweet from the same address of Dan Loves Camp.
I work at piercewilliams.org. I blog at yoyojoe.com. And my Twitter handle is at YoYoJoeR, because my last name is Richards, and YoYoJoe on Twitter is a very nice toy store in Delaware.
Great. And I am Twittering professionally at OurKidsNet, and my personal Twitter is ZOIC, or ZOIC, for our friends to the south.
It's Zed, not Z.
I have a couple of side projects. One of which I mentioned last program that's taking off a little bit, which is camptweets.com. And it's a place where all the tweets with the hashtag summercamp, all one word, are funneling through there. So if people aren't familiar with hashtags and don't know how to set that up to make it easy, it's a place where you can go to see what people are talking about camp at camptweets.com. Our camp blog is at campnation.ca. So I have a couple of quick news things. One is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp, we have a contest where we are inviting people to show us your staff. Show us the cool skills of the people that work for you. So there's a video contest there promoting people who, all of the hidden talent that you have at camp, really looking for people who are recording their own music. It can be a cover, originals, whichever. To record a video and put that up there. There's some cool prizes from companies like Toshiba. And that contest goes till the end of May. The other thing I want to do is, I did this last time, and I'm grateful to do it again. Adam Isidore from PathToRhythm.com is a longtime camp person who has volunteered to help out Camp Nation and record some interviews for us when he was at Tri-State. So we've put some of them up on the blog. Dan did the same. But happy to give Adam a plug at PathToRhythm.com because he's got some great interviews from Tri-State. So they're available in the iTunes feed and available on our blog as well. And the last thank you goes to our long-suffering audio editor, Donovan Romanek, from whereitsatproductions.ca. And hopefully we are giving Don good, easy product to work with today. And I want to thank you all for meeting up with me on Skype today and Joe for coming into the office. And for our listeners, I want to thank you so much for downloading the Camp Nation podcast. You can find our show notes, as I said, at campnation.ca.
This Camp Nation podcast was brought to you by Our Kids Go to Camp magazine and the camps.ca online summer camp directory. Thanks for listening.